With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to a Cinematic Universe minisode. I'm your host Joe Cunningham, and joining me to bridge the gap between our Avengers Infinity War and Deadpool 2 episodes is...
James Hunt.
Yeah, so we're slightly in mourning here because Seb turned to dust and blew away into the wind last week.
Only slightly in mourning.
Yeah, well, I mean, it means we get a free reign, so...
And we have a lot more resources now, which I'm quite happy about.
Yeah, I mean... Not the worst thing that could have happened, really. Like, we're only splitting the Patreon two ways now. Okay, so yeah, this is our first episode since Infinity War. We should probably mention, James, before we get into the news proper, it broke the record for the highest grossing opening weekend ever in North America, and also the worldwide total for an opening weekend as well. And the worldwide number is especially interesting because that came without Russia and China, yeah, which are like two of the most enormous markets you can get internationally. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, second Star Wars is what we're saying here, right?
Well, it's interesting because I think I was reading on Forbes that who are pretty, you know, one of the best places to go for your box office analysis, that they really didn't think that Star Wars The Force Awakens would be beaten for a long time. And I think inflation adjusted, I think Infinity War might be slightly behind. But what The Force Awakens was like this generational movie that had all of the hype in and of itself, but also kind of like promised to be the first true Star Wars sequel, the first movie that actually went back and revisited the story that people loved from 30 years ago. Whereas this is movie 19 in a franchise, and obviously, like, it's difficult to play Infinity War as an underdog. But
well, yeah, it's interesting though, isn't it? Because
it's a triumph of marketing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like Star Wars is going to be playing to diminishing returns for probably a long while now, because it's just going to be a new Star Wars movie every year. They already put all the old people in the first one, so it's not like they can do a big Star Wars team-up of where they put everyone together, right? Short of bringing back Darth Vader, I'm not sure there's anything they can do that would compete with Infinity War in terms of story.
But yet, this is part one for Infinity War. And we've got... I know it's not going to be called part two, and I know that they have tried to sell it as... as like, oh no, it's not a two-part story. Like, I know we originally called it that, but it's not. It definitely is. They're going to be very different movies, but it's part two of the story. I've seen a lot of comparisons to TV, basically. A lot of like, what's the Star Trek Next Generation episode where
The best Picard, of both worlds.
Yeah, where Picard gets assimilated.
I'm not going to lie, that thought crossed my mind.
Yeah, I read that, and I've seen a lot of comparisons to TV cliffhangers.
The only movie cliffhanger that springs to mind is The Matrix Reloaded.
And yeah,
look how well that worked out for us.
Yeah, Back to the Future Part Two. But even that kind of tells you what's happened at the end. And then it gives you a trailer for the next one at the end of the movie.
That's more of a glorified post-credit scene, wasn't it? Like, if Back to the Future Part 2 had come out today, that would have been the credit sequence.
Yeah. apologies. Hopefully we haven't said anything spoilerific for Avengers Infinity War in here, but you know, it's the mini-sode after that episode, so we're probably going to drop spoilery stuff as we go. And I'm definitely going to do that now because we got an email in. We got an email from George Baxter who just wanted to, in a very polite way, it has to be said, and a really eloquent way, take us to task on us saying that Infinity War didn't really have themes. And I won't read his full email, but he was basically saying that he thought that sacrifice was the overriding theme of Infinity War.
Did we say that? Maybe it only occurred to me on second viewing, but I've definitely had conversations about how, you know, the sacrifice of things you love in particular is a big theme in the movie.
I'm just going to read his final paragraph because I think this sums it up well.
Yeah.
I think Marcus and McFeely are attempting to prepare the audience for some real losses in the next film and want us to reflect on what is a good death and when we should and shouldn't sacrifice. In a universe that has been largely free of death and ultimate consequence, it makes sense to let these characters and the audience have a dry run. Are we willing to sacrifice our new Avengers to hold on to the old, or vice versa? Which, you know, you can't argue with that, you really, can you? I think that's...
No, that is very true.
A very, very good point. And yeah, I think maybe when I said it doesn't have themes, that was silly. Because it's hard to make a movie that doesn't have any kind of themes that it's going back and hitting. I think maybe what I'm saying is that for me, there isn't a deeper story, or there isn't a deeper... after Thanos, obviously, there isn't like a character who you like... cling on to. What is the secret story that the filmmakers are trying to get through here?
Yeah, I mean,
sacrificing is a good counter argument.
I think it's more of a motif, isn't it? Like, it's something everyone touches on, but it's not what the movie's about in a larger way. It's just a thread that like ties every character together. The idea, like, the having seen it twice now, the part of the story that I think is most sort of interesting on a thematic level is when Cap says to Vision, "We don't trade lives."
And that's exactly what we think they're going to have to do.
Yeah. I mean, and I imagine the way it's going to play out is that Cap will be like, "Well, I don't trade other people's lives, but I will trade mine."
And Bucky's.
I imagine Bucky would die of grief.
It's fine by me. It's funny. Someone, I was at work and someone shouted from the other side of the office to me, "Joe, what's this? That Spider-Man's dead." And I was like, "It's not that."
Several people run out of the rooms with their ears covered.
I work. My workplace is not the kind of place that is that obsessed with Marvel spoilers. Most people are like, yeah. So no one was too concerned. But I just think it's funny that it's this is a movie that is like everyone is talking about. It feels like an event, doesn't it?
Yeah, even the people at my work who aren't particularly into Marvel, and I've got, like, of my main colleagues, I've got one who is a super Marvel nerd and one who is completely uninterested generally.
Hmm.
But even she is like, I kind of want to see what everyone's talking about.
Yeah, and I was chatting to my friend about it, and he's kind of like, he's seen most of the Marvel movies. He's like, yeah, I'm going to get around seeing this, but I'm so busy at work. And I was like... He kept asking me things and said, and I was like, "Mate, you're just gonna have to go see it." And he went, "Yeah, all right." And then just went out at like 9-10 o'clock one night and caught a late screening and came back, messaged me at like 1 a.m, like, "Right, okay, so," it's a huge phenomenon, and it's going to be very interesting. I think to begin with, how they market part four. When it comes to next year, because you can't say this is the culmination of everything twice. But as we said last week, maybe they say this is the beginning of everything.
Yeah, I do wonder, because like with most movies, you would imagine things that have a big opening tend to, like, you know, it tends to go down from there. It's rare you get two movies in a series setting the high watermark.
You could feasibly see if they hit the marketing right again, you could see that record being broken 12 months from now.
Yeah, and like, because I'm, you know, people are coming out of Infinity War, like, not lots of people, but some people are coming out going like, oh, well, that was dumb. And like, those people aren't going to give 4 another chance, probably. But equally, people who didn't see, you know, people who went to see Infinity War having been convinced by the marketing and liked it might then make up for them. So I'll be very interested to see whether it's sort of more or less or equal, ultimately.
Yeah.
My gut says it might not be as big.
It's going to be tough. But I don't know where it sits in the schedule next year in terms of what it can make overall as well. Because the difficulty that this movie has is that Deadpool comes out a couple of weeks after, as does Han Solo. And ultimately, those screens are going to go in a way that Black Panther was able to just monopolize the multiplex screens for 8-10 weeks.
Yeah.
Infinity War isn't going to be able to do that. But
yeah, and like we joke about Star Wars, but broadly it's the same audience.
Yeah. Yeah, who's as is Deadpool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Infinity War and Star Wars, so.
But still, I've just been fascinated by how far-reaching the conversation for this movie has gone, and and how broadly positive the reaction has been. I think there are some people that this franchise is never going to win round. I think the movie has its flaws, but there's no denying that as a piece of event cinema, and that's kind of what a crossover should be, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It should be a big event.
Yep.
And for me, it did what it needed to do. And now let's see if it can pay it off in 12 months' time.
Indeed.
Anyway, we talked about it for 3 hours on our last podcast.
I just want to quickly say that as a piece of event cinema, I will never stop being surprised that... Because like when I was a teenager in the 90s, I was reading these comics and they were super obscure and no one had really heard of them. I had maybe one or two friends who were into them. Primarily off the back of the like cartoons, and Avengers in particular, no one gave a shit about the Avengers.
Not just that, this is a movie where can you imagine 10 years ago saying, right, this movie, Thanos is the villain. Some of the key players in it are Doctor Strange, Gamora, Star-Lord. You know,
just
like
the idea that people would be like, oh yeah, you know. People in my workplace who don't read comics would be like, oh, yeah, that's Thanos.
The big showdown's going to be about protecting Vision. It takes place in Wakanda.
Like, complete strangers coming up to me in the cinema and being like, can you tell me who Adam Warlock is? What's Captain Marvel?
it's the nerds have taken over. This is your world now, James. We simply live in it.
If this was my world, we would be having this conversation about X-Men movies.
Well, yes. But we're not. And for our first piece of news this week, we're going to talk about an MCU movie.
I just gave you the perfect segue into Deadpool 2, but carry on.
There's nothing to talk about with Deadpool 2. It's coming out in a few weeks. It's doing all of its marketing. It's doing what we're expecting it to do. I'm sure it'll be great, and that will be our next episode on the show. But Ant-Man and the Wasp. So, James, can we talk our listeners through the process? We were going to talk about the Ant-Man and the Wasp trailer now, and you said to me, you were like, well, what's it like? Can you remind me what's different about this from the first trailer? And I was like, well, yeah, there's a bit more of ghosts. It's funnier. There's more of the like the and you were like. And you just booted it. And maybe I should rewatch it because... And then you were like, oh, hang on.
Yeah, what happened was I got...
You'd watch the first one again.
Who had re-uploaded the first trailer and labelled it trailer 2. In order to get my hard-earned eyeballs.
And you'd watched it and then gone like, I don't really understand why the internet's getting that excited about this. Like, yeah,
exactly.
Hmm.
Turns out
you'd watched
it. The trailer is actually quite good.
And it was quite fun listening to you watch it over Skype. I could just hear these out-of-context chuckles, which I think you said were mostly from the Luis section.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think this trailer, again, f- fairly light on plot. I think what we know is that they will be on the run, that Ghost, who's the villain, has got the tech, has stolen the tech from Hank Pym and has also visited the Quantum Realm, and that some of this movie will be taking place in the Quantum Realm, but all we've really seen are like very brief flashes of that in the trailer.
Yeah.
So, what is it about this trailer that works for you then?
Ooh, that works for me. I mean, just sort of the general tone of it seemed a lot more like action comedy. Like, I get that the previous film was like their, you know, heist movie. I think maybe this is going to be a bit more sort of towards the character's strengths.
I love the energy of this trailer. It feels like so obviously I think the shot that everyone has picked out is the life-sized ant. Sorry, the human-sized ant playing the drums. But it feels like the entire trailer is like playing out to an ant playing the drums, if you know what I mean? Like, yeah. it's just got that kineticism. And Paul Rudd, I said the one thing that I took out of the rewatch of Ant-Man, the first Ant-Man on my marathon, was Paul Rudd doesn't get to be funny until like halfway through. Mm-hmm. He's carrying this nondescript baggage for the first half of the movie. Yeah. And really a lot of the characters don't come into their own until about halfway through. It's only really Luis who arrives fully formed.
That's very true. It's notable in this trailer, isn't it, that Hope is completely different from the sort of sour-faced, disapproving madam she was in the first movie.
Well, in parts of the first movie, because once you get to the point where they have their, where Hank and Hope have their big heart-to-heart, mm-hmm. and again, that's one of the first times where Paul Rudd gets to be funny, where they cut and he's watching them from the doorway and going, this is, what a moment. This is so nice. See? And after that, she gets to stop being disapproving, like, why is this guy getting this? She just joins in and goes along for the ride. It's mm-hmm. just disappointing that she doesn't actually get to do any of the superheroics. And I mean, lucky at this trailer, she seems awesome. Like, I'm in the bag for Evangeline Lilly. I have been since Lost, and I think she's great, and I think she has that. I think she has that hard edge that you don't need to play up, as you said, that kind of like sour, disapproving thing. I think she has that edge where she can have the fun, but still feel a little bit frosty. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you need to play it up. And there's a couple of moments, because I've rewatched both of these trailers, it's a couple of moments where you just see her like raise an eyebrow or give a little kind of grin, where you can tell it's kind of like she's getting to play up both sides of things this time.
It does she reminds me of Jennifer Aniston in that it seems like she's going to be doomed playing love interests when her abilities far outstrip that.
Yeah, but here she is as the villain, as the hero in the title of a Marvel film.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope they are not overselling that.
Well, I am willing to trust in Peyton Reed, who is a guy who directed Bring It On and Down With Love as two of his first movie. I'm less keen on The Breakup and Yes Man, but admittedly I haven't seen either of those as recently. But Bring It On and Down With Love are like both really progressive, intelligent movies that the first Ant-Man movie has its problems with female characters. And having seen those movies, I just don't buy that problem emanated from Peyton Reed. I think that problem probably emanated from a director who always has trouble with his female characters.
Yeah, and completely agree with that.
Happened to depart Ant-Man slightly before. whereas this movie, like, it's got a female villain and no one's like, it's not a big deal. Like, no one's like banging the drum like, oh, look, we've got a female villain in Ant-Man and the Wasp. Evangeline Lilly is above the title and in the title. You've got Michelle Pfeiffer turning up in this one. And you know, I don't think you cast Michelle Pfeiffer to do nothing. It feels like they are course correcting because they know that they copped some flack for what they did wrong by its female characters in the first movie. Haven't seen any Judy Greer though, but we haven't seen any Bobby Cannavale either. So maybe they're just not much of a part of this movie.
True. I'm very excited to see the ghost, by the way.
She looks cool, right? That the so you've got all of the cool Ant-Man and the Wasp stuff where they are getting bigger and smaller and smashing through things, but then you see the ghost doing all the same stuff, but just phasing through things. Mm-hmm. And Hannah John Kamen, I've seen her in a. She was in Ready Player One recently, and she hasn't really left much of an impact in the stuff that I've seen her in. But I think she has a great look. Like, she has these eyes that are pretty distinctive, and I like the look of this, and I like that one brief shot of her where you can see her face in this trailer, and she's kind of like looking confused as to what's happening. It just suggests that they're at least thinking about what is the psyche of this villain. Because mm-hmm. again, I think one of the weak points of the first movie is that, well, they kind of bottle it slightly. They introduce Corey Stoll's character as just like, he's a nutter. He's an evil nutter. He's yeah. just a power mad nut. And then they ADR a couple of lines in where it's like, oh, it's the technology, Aaron. It's driving you crazy.
It's the particles.
Yeah,
sure it is.
No, just make him an evil fuck. That's fine. If that's the way you're going to go. But also, have Marvel fixed their villain problem?
I've been thinking this for the last couple of films because... Well,
Black Panther and Infinity War.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, Black Panther and Infinity War, flat out excellent villains.
Civil War.
Pretty excellent villain. Like, not especially cinematic villain.
No, but also it works.
Complex in an interesting way.
Yeah. I don't think Hela quite works for me as well as she did for other people, but...
I think Hela is probably at least a sort of higher tier villain. She's kind of... There's not a huge amount of distance between her and, say, Ironmonger. But...
No, yeah.
That said, she's still, you know, the performance was good and the motivations were there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe they've solved their villain problem. And I think just the other things to pick out from this trailer, aside from just like it looking like a romp, it looking like the kind of summer action movie I want to go and spend 2 hours just having a blast with, which, Marvel have done very well with in the past. Mm-hmm. There is obviously Lawrence Fishburne in here, who we hadn't seen. I think we saw like a one shot of him in the first trailer. He gets to banter a bit with Paul Rudd in the final scene. It's a dumb joke, but it's a funny joke about their kind of size measurements, which is really fun. Oh God, what was the other thing? I can't even remember. There was something else in the trailer I thought, oh, that looks cool. Oh, I was just thinking it'll be nice to see Peyton Reed actually getting to play around with Giant Man. Yes. Paul Rudd brings back his maniacal laugh for the scene at the end as well.
The thing I like about that is that one of the... like, I guess Iron Man does this a lot, but a lot of the Marvel stuff doesn't ever get into why being a superhero is fun. And that's something I think Ant-Man at least has recaptured.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Because, yeah. It's supposed to be something you want to do.
Yeah, and Spider-Man, I guess, as well.
Spider-Man to a point, yeah. If Spider-Man has the opposite problem, which is that it doesn't ever remind you why he wouldn't do this full-time.
Yes, that is my problem with that movie. Yeah. But I also have a problem with Ant-Man and the Wasp. It is the elephant in the room. Ant-Man and the Wasp is released on July 4th weekend in the States, and rolls out in most territories around the world between the 4th and the 6th. It's in a couple of countries in the weeks after that. It doesn't arrive in the UK till the 3rd of August.
Yeah, and whose fault is this?
Well, so a combination of factors. I think the main one is that it is the World Cup this summer.
Yeah, the World Cup of association football.
Mm. Unfortunately, though, James, in 2018, the crossover between a Marvel movie and football fans, they are just both mainstream events. So, yes, there is going to be a lot of crossover.
I mean, they could quite easily push back the World Cup instead.
The thing is, well, that would be, I'll cancel it given this. Side point, I love the World Cup. I have my love for football has kind of diminished over the past decade to the point where I don't really watch much of it anymore. But the thing that I always get excited for is the World Cup. I am not going to be watching this summer's World Cup because of where it has been taking place, because of the politics of FIFA, and because the next World Cup is taking place in Qatar, and people are literally dying to build those stadiums, and no one seems to care about those human rights abuses to make this football tournament happen. So I'm not watching the Russia World Cup. So what I would like is really good movies in cinemas instead. And for the first time in God knows how long, because this used to happen in the UK all the time, mm-hmm. that we would have to wait not just a month sometimes, like 6-8 months for a movie to get over to the UK. Because that's just the way they decided to phase the international release. And for the first time in ages, we're now going to have to wait for Ant-Man and the Wasp, which, apologies to our international listeners who will be wanting our Ant-Man and the Wasp episode July 4th weekend. We're not going to have it until a month after. There are a couple of other factors. Obviously, when the World Cup happens, you basically squeeze all the releases into different weeks. There is also The Incredibles 2, which I imagine there'll be a bit of crossover. And one of the big factors, I think, as well, is that Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again is coming out in the UK this summer. And that is expected to be a behemoth, because the first movie, I think, is still maybe like the second highest grossing movie in UK box office history. And is going to be taking up a lot of screens. So I think there's probably been a lot of things that Marvel have had to dance around. And yeah, it sucks a little bit, but I mean, at least it happened with this and not Infinity War. And I'm not saying that because I wanted to see Infinity War vastly more than this. I expect there will be less major spoilers that we're going to receive in that intervening month than we would have done. I mean, we'll probably find out which one of them disappears. Also, I'm trending towards, you know, I think the Wasp is going to disappear at the end of this movie.
Yeah, I think and if either of them is, it's probably going to be her.
Because I also think that Ant-Man could be at risk in Avengers 4.
Maybe. No, I don't think so.
And then your third film in the trilogy is a Wasp movie.
Nah.
Ant-Man and the Wasp, The Wasp. Boom. Trilogy. Nailed it. Let's move on to a movie that's definitely not making it to a full trilogy. This trailer came out before Infinity War, but we didn't have a time to talk about it properly on the podcast. Venom got its first official trailer, or its first full trailer, James, and we got our first look at Venom.
Yeah,
we did. I'm not going to sit here and bitch and whine about what Venom looks like, because...
Can I?
Well, how do you do that character and it not look... I don't know. Like, I think at least it looks suitably horrific.
I don't feel like they've interpreted any further than Spider-Man 3 did, and Spider-Man 3 proved that it didn't get it right.
Like, This looks more...
Okay, shall I tell you what...
Alive, I guess.
What they should have done with Venom is gone full CGI, like, Incredible Hulk size... Because doing a human-sized Venom with that mouth and those eyes just doesn't work.
Well, he's not quite human-sized, is he? Because he kind of, like, grows over the top of... So yeah. It'd be like his head is, like, 1.5 size times the size of a human head.
Yeah, but I've seen cosplayers come up with a better look for Venom than that.
I didn't walk away from this trailer going, that's the bit that doesn't have me interested, because it's a Venom movie.
Oh, no, I completely agree. Like, that's not the bad part of the trailer.
It just looks...
dull? Boring?
Yeah, and here's what it looks like. It looks like a Netflix Marvel show.
Yes. As I think I said this on Twitter, actually, but my problem with this movie is that the character of Venom, like, virtually every... thing that's interesting and good about Venom comes from him being either in opposition to Spider-Man or as a sort of juxtaposition against him.
What if Venom is Spider-Man in the MCU when Spider-Man doesn't exist?
Well, this is the thing. Like,
for one summer, you have Tom Hardy as Venom.
If you cut out all that stuff from the character, what you have is sort of down on his luck woe is me journalist, gets an alien suit that gives him superpowers. And it's like, where's the thematic resonance for that character? It's Seb just the like stupid disparate elements.
Seb was annoyed by Symbiote.
Symbiote, that was, I mean, there's an established precedent of saying Symbiote for 20, 25 years. You can't just change it now.
It seemed like an odd performance from Jenny Slate. But I look at this cast and I go, Tom Hardy, and I did actually think there is always something interesting about a Tom Hardy performance. Even when it doesn't work, it's interesting.
It's usually and, the voice, right?
Well, yeah, and I did kind of like the scene of him, or the part of him, part of the trailer where he's in the apartment and he punches the guy out of the wall and he goes, now why would we do that? And I liked how he kept referring to himself as we, and I can imagine Tom Hardy kind of signing onto this movie as like, oh, I get to essentially do my Jekyll and Hyde, but on a big budget superhero movie.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things I used to like about Venom, that they kind of dropped for a while.
That looks
he would always say we, as in yeah, we are Venom.
Yes, and I did like that in this trailer. And I look at the cast. Tom Hardy, Michelle Williams, Jenny Slate, Woody Harrelson, Riz Ahmed, Reed Scott. Like, those are all people who I like. I'm less convinced about Ruben Fleischer as a director. Not that he hasn't made good films, I'm not sure that he was the impetus behind Zombieland being good. I shouldn't feel I shouldn't feel as like negative towards this trailer as I do, but I just don't know what I'm grasping onto in this. I don't know what the hook is that should be getting me excited about this movie, other than, oh hey, it's a character from comic books and they're popular right now. Mm-hmm. Right,
well yeah, it kind of looks like a film that should have been made 15-20 years ago
or a film that doesn't need to be Venom.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, there's nothing about this film or as Venom as a character that gives you a sort of easy in. Like, what's the story of Eddie Brock? Like, what, he's a guy who finds an alien and they become a superhero?
Yeah, it seems like, yeah, he's a journalist who uncovers something and then, yeah, I don't know, it doesn't...
Like, that's not to say the film won't have an answer to that question, but certainly, yeah, based on the trailers, yeah, there's no
hook in the trailer so far that makes me go, that is why I should want to go and see Venom.
Yeah.
Ah, hey-ho. Back to the MCU now, and a movie that we are fairly certain is going to be coming early on in Marvel's Phase 3 is Black Widow. It's... I don't know if you agree, James, like, what we've heard around this movie has very much moved on from Marvel are developing a Black Widow movie to... A Black Widow movie is coming very early on in Phase 3.
Well, I don't know. Like, what's the latest we've heard on it?
Justin Kroll, who's one of the big industry reports, I think he's a Variety, tweeted out, fun fact, more than 65 directors have met for the Black Widow job. Marvel are being extremely thorough on this one. There was a report that Denise Gamze-Egeven, I'm going to mess up a bunch of these names, I apologise, director of Mustang, Chloe Zhao, director of The Rider, Amma Asante, director of Belle, who is a very a director whose work I'm a fan of, so that piqued my interest. they had all met, and then Justin Kroll also said that Maggie Betts, who directed Novitate, and Angela Robinson, who, James, you'll be interested to hear, directed, yes, Professor Marston and the Wonder Women, they've all met for this movie, and they've met with 65 different directors. It sounds like this is happening soon. But what I will be very interested to find out is, I don't think that Black Widow is necessarily safe in Avengers 4, even if she gets her own movie, because I think the one thing we all think about Black Widow is, like, you want to see the story just before, don't you?
Yeah, like
you want to see Budapest
that we still haven't seen.
So we've been to. I don't think I want to see her back in the like the Black Widow program.
Well, but okay. I think the gaps in the in the character here are she was raised a Russian assassin.
I think the story is when she transitioned to the good side.
Because there's a 20-year gap between coming out of the Red Room and joining S.H.I.E.L.D.
Maybe not 20, but...
15 years.
Yeah. She's not that old. that and I think unless, you know, Infinity War sets her up to be in a really unique position where suddenly she is... I just don't know. I don't know what her solo story would be, and because of like her power set and her like her espionage skills, I'm not sure where you'd want to set her up at the end of Avengers 4.
It does sort of feel like if they're gonna do a Black Widow story at this point, it's one that certainly demands to have major backstory elements, if not be a prequel.
And imagine if she has been killed off in Avengers 4, and then we do get as a swan song finally that solo movie.
Well, yeah, because that could potentially lead to interesting things, because it would be Marvel saying like, well, we don't have to do everything in the main narrative, like we can go do our prequels too.
Just because a character is dead does not mean we can never see from them again.
Exactly.
I would like to see Black Widow survive because I like Scully Hansen, and I like the character. But yeah, in terms of the solo movie, I think that's what I'd like to see the most. I think we're gonna get that. So we know that Spider-Man: Homecoming is one of the first movies in Phase 3. I think we're probably gonna get Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 pretty early on in that. Black Widow might be one that's quite high up as well. And if there's any justice, Doctor Strange too.
Doctor Too Strange.
I'm not every character who died in every character who was turned to dust. Surely they're the ones that are definitely getting sequels quite early on. Yeah. But Black Panther 2, though, just a tidbit, it sounds like Marvel are going to wait for Ryan Coogler to make that movie. Mm-hmm. So if he needs to go away and make another film, that's fine. They'll wait for him. They're not going to bring someone else in. And I think that is a very wise choice.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I'm always wary of Hollywood's like negotiating in that sense, because as we've talked about before, you get things where executives say things that are designed to be like bargaining chips and saying we'll wait for Ryan Coogler might actually mean we'll wait for him to lower his price.
I hope that's not what the case is.
Like I'm fairly sure they will want him back, and the main reason they haven't announced a sequel yet is because they're still writing contracts and figuring out like who does what.
Maybe so. Let's move over to DC. There isn't a lot of DC news to talk about at the moment. And certainly
staying well out the way of this.
Certainly not on the big screen anyway. I think it's probably wise that DC are just taking a back seat at the moment. I saw even that David Ayer had been quoted saying that Marvel are killing it right now. It's like, oh, that's interesting. David Ayer has had a change of tune since when he said fuck Marvel.
Yeah, that's David Ayer has been told he's not doing the Harley Quinn movie is what that is.
But I think the one DC movie that we are all interested in is Wonder Woman 2, because Wonder Woman 1 was great. Mm-hmm. CinemaCon took place I think the weekend before last, and Wonder Woman presented there. And the small detail on that is that it will be taking place in the 1980s. So we already knew that Kristen Wiig was on board to play Cheetah. And it had been rumoured for a while that it was going to be Cold War era stuff. And so I guess certainly if you set it early 80s, or maybe even, you know, Gal Gadot's going to be the one who she tears down the wall. Who knows? But I'm interested by some Cold War era Wonder Womaning, and I can only imagine what Diana Prince, who now lives...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Not on Themyscira, but on, you know, in mainland world, mm-hmm. If that makes any sense. she's going to be rocking some 80s fashion, which can only be a great thing.
I would be very surprised if we don't get to see the white power suit in some of this.
Do you think Cheetah's just going to be like... she's going to just be like an exercise instructor or something like that.
Yeah, in the leopard print.
Yeah, in the leopard print, like doing like some fitness aerobics in a mall or something.
I'm hoping it's Wonder Woman who brings Tetris to the West, frankly.
Well, then she would be the truest of all heroes.
Exactly.
So that's our DC tidbit. Wonder Woman, still the one thing that is a constant in the DC universe that we know we can look forward to and is actually going to happen. We'll move away now from Marvel and DC. And this is a rumor, James, so let's not get too excited. But Jamie Foxx is rumored to be in line to play Spawn. How would that work for you? Because I know nothing about Spawn, and I know a bit about Jamie Foxx, but I can't bring the two together.
I mean, Jamie Foxx has been responsible for some very excellent performances and some also very terrible performances.
List them.
I mean, I'm thinking mainly of Jamie Foxx in Baby Driver, great fun. Jamie Foxx in Amazing Spider-Man 2, absolutely horrendous.
Who is it in Baby Driver that Jamie Foxx comes in? There's someone in the opening scene, isn't there? It's John Bernthal, and John Bernthal leaves the movie, and then Jamie Foxx comes back in playing the exact same character but a different guy now. That's good writing. It's a bad movie, you guys. I don't understand.
Yeah, no, why. I'm with you, but I enjoyed that performance.
Yeah, he is good. He can be funny. I'm just thinking of the didn't he start off in Living Colour? Am I imagining that? He's obviously an Oscar winner. What was the bad, did you say, sorry?
Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Which, was that his fault?
It's hard to say, isn't it?
I've seen him in The Soloist. That's a bad performance.
He was doing no favours in Amazing Spider-Man 2, regardless of whether he was being told to do that performance or chose it.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I don't massively disagree with you that Jamie Foxx can be either very good or very bad. So I was just interested to see where you pointed towards. Would he fit with Spawn? Is he a good casting choice for Spawn? Is Spawn black, by the way?
Spawn is, yeah. Al Simmons is black.
I did not know. Sorry, I didn't. Spawn. Right, okay.
Yeah. He's not the traditional image of Spawn for me. Like, he's a bit too sort of wiry.
So who would you think of as Spawn?
Good question. Mike Coulter would have made a good Spawn, I think. That, like, if someone says Mike Coulter's playing Spawn, I would go, of course he is.
So just someone kind of, like, cool and steely.
Yes, exactly. Like, that's the thing. Like, Jamie Foxx has this kind of manic energy about him.
Sometimes.
Well, most of the, in the films I've seen, I think of him as a guy who is very energetic.
Have you seen Collateral?
I have not.
Right, okay, so that for me would... I mean, that's not like... It's not superhero stuff, but he can very much play reined back as well.
But I mean, he seems very intense and not in the Mike Coulter like you say, wall of steel way. Mm.
Do you know what though, James? I know nothing about Spawn, but Todd McFarlane has obviously had huge success with the character, kind of delivering something that his audience wanted. He is writing and directing this thing, and he has Blumhouse, Jason Blum, who is, you know, an absolute genius in the world of, like, low-budget horror. Mm-hmm. And has also, like, in more recent years, produced stuff like Get Out and what was the other Oscar-nominated one? Whiplash, I think, was one of the ones that he directed. Has had, like, huge commercial successes with the Sinister franchise and Insidious and all, and the Annabelle spin-offs and all those kind of things. The Purge, mm-hmm. I think, is theirs as well.
Yeah.
That's the guy that I would want to be working on this in order to make it A, good, and B, a success.
This is a rare instance of me being like, oh, well, that it's more interesting that that producer is involved than this director. Like, I don't trust Todd McFarlane to direct a movie. I'm not saying it's impossible. It doesn't feel like it's really in his skill set. I think he's done some animated videos before. Music videos, maybe, but it's a very different discipline, right? I mean, do you actually know the story of...
No. And if you told me in the past, I've forgotten.
So, he's a CIA Black Ops agent who gets killed by... I'm not going to say who by, actually, because that's potentially a spoiler. He gets killed in a sort of bad situation, and he makes a deal with someone who is essentially the devil. To, you know, see his wife again. And so what happens is they turn him into, like, the Hellspawn and send back to Earth. And the twist is it's 5 years later and, like, his wife has moved on and he's now this, like, undead slave in the thrall of hell.
Feels like Ghost Rider meets Punisher.
Yes, good call. And he's got a magic cape.
Ooh.
A bit like Doctor Strange.
Meets Doctor Strange. Okay, well, I, do you know what? I'm going to continue to have that marked down as a movie that could be potentially interesting.
Yeah, I'm very keen. I think it's on record. I'm very keen to go back and do the 98 Spawn.
Yeah, I to be honest with you, I don't think that will be too far in our future.
Yeah.
We're running out of movies, James. It's a good job they keep making these new ones.
Well, no thanks to, like, Fox.
Yeah, pushing two of the movies out of 2018. Thanks, guys. Let's talk about a movie, though, that is coming in 2018. Oh, what a segue. Into the Spider-Verse, the animated Spider-Man movie that, James, you were unconvinced by the trailer.
No, but then I've never seen a Marvel animated movie that made me go, oh, that was good. I've seen a lot that made me go, God, when is this going to finish?
Yeah, but they are, like, you're talking about mostly your...
Direct-to-DVD ones,
yeah. Your direct-to-DVD stuff. I guess the more direct comparison to this would be Big Hero 6, I guess. But even that's not... This is different. This is a major animation studio producing a big-budget animated movie that is going into cinemas starring... one of the biggest, well, the biggest Marvel brand in Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But the trailer didn't do it for you.
I, it's hard to say. It didn't not do it for me. It just, I wasn't excited as everyone else. It just, it seemed like that trailer was going for kind of easy wins.
Hey, I'm on board with the easy wins, if that, if that's what the easy wins look like. I just, I thought it looked cool. And as we know, that Phil Lord and Chris Miller, the all-powerful Lord Miller, worked on the scripts for this. And they can do no wrong, unless you are Kathleen Kennedy. They can do no wrong. What we learned about this week, so we already knew some of the voice cast. Mahershala Ali is voicing Aaron Davis. Brian Tyree Henry is a voice. Shameik Moore is voicing Miles Morales. We found out that Jake Johnson, who, James, I don't know if you know Jake Johnson, he's a New Girl. He was in Jurassic World.
Which one is he in New Girl?
He's Nick in New Girl.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, I know him.
So Jake Johnson is voicing Peter Parker, which if you told me Jake Johnson is playing Peter Parker, I go, ooh, no. Voicing Peter Parker, close my eyes and I go,
yeah,
that could work. That could absolutely work. He's funny, and I kind of really like that casting. This was also at CinemaCon. We found out that, unsurprisingly, given that we know that Aaron Davis is in it and Mahershala Ali is voicing that character, Prowler is going to be part of the movie. So I'm assuming it's that version of the Prowler. You're not going to have Aaron Davis in the movie and a different Prowler, are you?
I would be very surprised. I mean, there are other Prowlers, but I think it's fairly safe to say they're not going to pull a bait and switch on a kids movie.
And then also Green Goblin and Kingpin will both be making an appearance.
Interesting.
This sounds to me in, I think in a different way, but similar to what happened in the Lego Batman movie, where you throw all of this Spider-Man iconography and like an IP into the mix and you kind of focus on your key characters, but these people are all around the sides making cameos here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it strikes me that it's going to be very much a kids' movie in that regard, and sometimes that works fine. Like, there are lots of good kids' movies that appeal to adults, and sometimes you end up with Lego Batman.
But Lego Batman did come from the Lego movie, which is incredible, and came from Phil Lord and Chris Miller. It all comes back around. So I'm very much looking forward to Into the Spider-Verse. Who knows when that's going to get moved to? Well, I'm going to check IMDb. When are we getting that movie? I've been thrown into a funk like by all of this. Like I've got to wait an extra month for Ant-Man and the Wasp. Mm-hmm. I tweeted out in no way jokingly, Marvel, you are going to have to fly me out to the States to see this in July.
I mean, how much Patreon money are we going to have by then? Because. I'm not saying we have to go to the States for a weekend just to see a movie, but if we've got the money, I'm not saying we won't.
Can that money stretch to me meeting Paul Rudd and Evangeline Lilly?
Depends how quickly you run.
we get that on the 14th of December, so it's going to be a Christmas movie. Probably our last episode before our, what do we call them? The Cuppies? The fourth annual Cuppies. I think we said it as a joke and we've run with it. Jesus Christ.
You keep saying we, like me and Seb haven't vocally objected to that.
No, I don't post the episode titles. So if Cuppies made it into an episode title, I had nothing to do with it. That is pure, I mean, RIP, Seb Patrick.
Yeah.
Before he was dusted off into the wind, he called them the Cuppies in print.
Yeah.
Another little tidbit from before Infinity War was released. Kevin Feige said that an Eternals movie is one of those movies that is kind of in development. They're thinking about making an Eternals movie. I don't know if we've mentioned this already. We know we spoke about DC making a New Gods movie, didn't we? Is Eternals the New Gods of Marvel?
Basically, or is it that is a very good comparison. The problem with the Eternals is I don't see what you do with them. The Eternals to me are like a worse version of the Inhumans.
So you just reinvent them then, surely, right? you just take the idea and reinvent it in the MCU.
Yeah, I suppose. Just I've never read a version of the Eternals that actually works. So
what are they, by the way?
Segue into that. So within the Marvel Universe, the Celestials essentially come to every planet, in fact, and sculpt the evolution on there to create intelligent life. And the Eternals, I think they're either a variant they made, or they're like the original version, maybe, like the first try. And so, like, you've got these, they've got these superpowered, like, perfect humans, and their opposite numbers, the deviants, who are, like, grotesque and monstrous, and they've lived on Earth longer than humans have, in secret.
Right, okay.
And, you know, they're basically immortal.
So what does separate them from the Inhumans?
What separates them from the Inhumans are...
They don't sound massively different.
Well, that's the thing. The Inhumans, I think... I'm going to stretch my Marvel knowledge here. I think the Celestials used the Terrigen crystals to mutate Krees, and that created the Inhumans. Like, they're very, very similar idea.
Right, okay. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the Eternals and the Inhumans are definitely sort of, similar in concept and narratively close together. Like, they're definitely linked. And I never thought I would say this about the Inhumans, but the Inhumans are actually more interesting than the Eternals. Because at least with the Inhumans, you have, like, this built-in, like, monarchistic society structure, and the royal family who have actual characters in, who've done other things within the Marvel Universe other than turn up and say, we're the Eternals, let's have a fight.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, let's see whether that actually is something that Marvel progress with. I wonder whether they're getting to the point where even with the IP that they have, given some of the stuff that they have handed over to TV, which includes the Inhumans, Cloak and Dagger, the Netflix heroes, and whoever they're thrown into the New Warriors, for example. And even Ghost Rider, I guess, has gone over there. I wonder whether they are now just going bigger, your bigger characters, your cosmic characters, other than Spider-Man, not really your street-level characters, these are the ones that we're going to let happen on... The street-level characters are the ones that we let happen on TV, and it doesn't really matter if the concept isn't great for the other ones. We can as long as it's a name value IP, we can rework it for the big screen.
I mean, it is sort of interesting to think, like, maybe where are they going to go next? Because I imagine they, like, saying we've got the Eternals in development doesn't strike me as especially, it's not big news, because I bet they've got everyone in development.
Yeah, well, so Kevin Feige said that they had a board, and that there is a board with all of these characters who are viable, that could work as a movie.
Yeah.
And it might be that they're doing something similar. I think we heard that, like, back when Marvel were kind of moving into Phase 2, they just basically had a list of characters and said, come at us with a pitch. If mm-hmm. you've got a pitch, we will listen to it.
Yeah, I can fully believe
and that's how that's how Guardians of the Galaxy kind of came about.
I'm trying to think who would I rather see than an Eternals movie that Marvel might have the rights.
Well, Moon Knight and Nova are the other two that have been mentioned.
Yeah, I would put money on seeing a Nova movie very quickly.
Yeah,
Moon Knight maybe. Moon Knight seems like more of a TV guy.
Yeah.
If they ever got
the rights together.
I would like to see Kazar. That would be fun. Who was the one? Oh, Submariner. Do we know the right status for Submariner?
Is that Namor?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, very complicated. Not going to happen anytime soon.
Fair enough.
Okay, so is that a last bit of MCU news?
Actually got a little bit of MCU news that you may not have heard.
Ooh.
Are you up to date with the Adam Buxton podcast?
Oh, no, but I read about this, and let's talk about this, because it's fascinating. Do you know what? I couldn't... You explain it.
So Adam Buxton does a podcast where he interviews other comedians, primarily other comedians and actors.
And says "my wife" in a funny voice, and I did not in any way take it from him and Borat and mix them into one dumb impression.
But yeah, so he was interviewing Bob Mortimer of the, I imagine, primarily UK-centric comedy duo Reeves and Mortimer.
And it should be said, Bob Mortimer is a genius. I absolutely adore him, both from the work he's done, but also any time he speaks. He just seems like such a lovely man and such like a genuine, honest man. And that might have got him into a bit of trouble in this interview.
Yeah, so he casually tossed off the idea that they were developing a Reeves and Mortimer film with Ben Wheatley, but he signed up for one of those big Marvel films and therefore had to drop out.
Yes. So, interesting. Ben Wheatley, if anyone doesn't know, is the director, I guess, most recently directed High Rise and Free Fire, but also Sightseers, A Field in England, Kill List, Down Terrace. He's probably one of the most interesting genre filmmakers.
Yeah, I was actually saying this to
come out of the UK.
I was saying this to former podcast Mike Leader the other day, that maybe it makes me too much of a fanboy, but I consider him one of filmmaking's only actual mavericks.
I haven't seen all of his films, James. I've seen Sightseers and Kill List, I think, are absolute masterpieces. Kill List is terrifying. Sightseers is hilarious. I haven't seen his most recent two, Free Fire or High Rise, which I don't know how I've ended up not seeing those.
It's not perfect, but it's good fun. And importantly, it's got Brie Larson in.
And High Rise had Tom Hiddleston in.
Yeah, so you can see how he might have got into the Marvel family.
Yeah, well, but here's the thing. Knowing Bob Mortimer, has Bob Mortimer gone like, it's one of those big Marvel movies?
Yeah.
And what it could mean is like...
It could mean a Fox movie, could mean a DC movie, could mean a Star Wars movie.
Or it could be that like he's signed up to direct the Dread TV series or something, you know? Like it could...
Yeah.
Who knows? Or Bob Mortimer could literally have just been joking.
Yeah, I mean, having heard the podcast, I don't think it was a joke, because he says it with complete sincerity.
But he could just... I even wonder whether a big Marvel movie could just be like a synonym for a big movie. He's been offered like a $80 million budget or something.
Yeah, knowing Bob Mortimer and his position in pop culture, I don't think he would necessarily know or care about the difference between a Marvel Studios movie and a Fox Marvel movie and a Sony Marvel movie and a DC and a Marvel movie.
If you had to guess, what's a project that makes sense for Ben Wheatley?
Now you're putting me on the spot.
Because that, for me, that seems like you're in the Moonlight, in the Moon Knight realm.
Yeah, Moon Knight was the one that popped into my head. The only problem I would have with Ben Wheatley making a Marvel movie in general, though, is that, as I've said before, he's a director who seems to have an enormous amount of autonomy and sort of creative, like he's got a really powerful creative instinct. I don't see him playing well with a big studio. It's impossible.
In the Edgar Wright sense. Because I think we found out...
Like, imagine Edgar Wright, but five times more interesting, and that's Ben Wheatley.
I think we found out, though, that basically, if a director is willing to play within the system, your Taika Waititi's, Ryan Coogler's, those kind of people can make a movie within the Marvel fold, but it still feel like one of their movies.
Yeah. It might be a really good partnership.
Yeah.
The thing is, part of me just thinks, would I rather see the one Marvel Ben Wheatley movie, or would I rather see the four movies he would make in those 2 years instead? And I think as much as I love Marvel and as much as I love Ben Wheatley, I think they're probably going to be better apart.
What about Blade?
I'm not, like I say, it would be good. I still think you could do a good Blade movie without Ben Wheatley, and Ben Wheatley could do much better movies without Marvel.
Right, James, we've already been recording for over an hour. So I'm going to run through the rest of these pieces of news.
Another classic mini-sode.
Yes. We're onto the small screen now. DC have finally named their streaming platform. It's going to be called DC Universe. And previously we knew that the Titans TV show has been developed for that platform. That seems like the one that is closest to being released. There's been lots of set photos leaking online. And I think there is an audience that seems interested in that. I'm not part of that audience, but who knows if it turns up and the reviews are good. The Metropolis series that was previously mentioned was being developed for that platform. That series is apparently now being redeveloped. So it's not dead, but they're rethinking the approach. So let's see whether we ever
You're
see that.
An entire platform of prequels.
the other things they were working on were animated series, but the thing they've announced this week is that James Wan is going to be executive producing a Swamp Thing series, a hour-long live-action drama.
I've got to admit, I'm quite excited by that.
Yeah?
Yeah, because Swamp Thing, at least one would assume they're going to take inspiration from the Alan Moore version of Swamp Thing, and that being the case, you can't go wrong.
Is TV the avenue to do Swamp Thing?
I can definitely see it working more than the movie, especially, like I say, if you go the Alan Moore way of like exploring the nature of this plant who at least initially believes he's a man. And, you know, if they take the kind of psychedelic elements that Alan Moore introduced, play up the horror angle, I could see it really working well.
And James Wan exec producing suggests that you're going down the horror side of things. And also, I mean, I think it just says to me as well that DC are happy to stay in the James Wan business, whatever he's doing on Aquaman. Whether Aquaman's a hit or not, I mean, James Wan has had hits before. I think Aquaman is going to be one of those movies that surprises us how good it is, considering how much we don't care about its lead, or completely reorientates the Aquaman character to the point that we go, oh, do you know what? You don't necessarily have to be just like a one note catchphrase spouting annoying topless git. You could do fun stuff with that character, and so maybe that will happen. But yeah, so James Wan doing stuff for DC on the big and the small screen. And then James, our final piece of news, it has been confirmed the series will be called Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Very happy with that.
Yeah. And very there was a shot of Kieran Shipka in the chair with the logo on the back of the chair.
Looking exactly like a Francesco Francavilla painting with the black and the red. I was very pleased with that.
Yeah, I think that is... I haven't watched Riverdale for about 6 months, but...
I need to do a big catch-up, but...
Yeah, I could be tempted to catch up ahead of... I mean, if you told me that Sabrina was going to be in the season finale, I would tune in. But it sounds like for now that they're not crossing over.
For now.
Okay, James, we'll move on to our final section now, which is the pitch. And obviously, Seb isn't here... but he has sent me his pitch, and I wondered if you wanted to go first or second, given what happened last time I asked you this question.
This time, I'm going to go first.
Okay. Seb's is very brief, so...
Remind us of the pitch.
So, thank you for presenting for me. I had forgotten. So last week, we got a lot of listeners to send in questions and the things we wanted to cover about Infinity War. One of our listeners on Twitter @LastFilmScene asked us to pitch our ideal credit scenes for Avengers 4. He actually said what his would be. So I can
I think it's only fair to read them out.
So he has a mid-credit scene, which is Tony and Pepper's wedding, all of the heroes and supporting characters that survived at the service. It's going to be pretty grim, though, given that Tony is dead. And post-credits, a few seconds later, in the same scene, a portal opens up and something Fantastic Four-related comes through.
Just something Fantastic Four-related.
Yeah. I don't know. A Doom mask. Sure. So that's the thing that you have to be. Obviously, Sebs as well. That's the benchmark. That's the word I was searching for. So, James, give me your pitch. Your post-credit scene for Avengers 4. You can have more than one if you want, but we probably only require one.
I only had one, and it's the one I immediately thought up when you gave me the pitch. I don't think it's going to be a big surprise to anyone, but the way I would do it is, you know, following whatever happens at the end of Infinity War Part 2, as we're going to call it, it would cut to a fairly average high school, follow around some fairly average kids, and at some point, one of them, like, falls to the ground and starts shooting optic beams from their eyes, and the, like, what we are witnessing is the earliest manifestation of a mutant in the cinematic universe, and it's Cyclops. And obviously, maybe, you know, pull back to Professor X watching this on Cerebro or something, or, you know, psychically viewing it, and we're gonna see the formation of the X-Men, ideally the original five X-Men, as it happens, essentially. And that's how you introduce them to the Marvel Universe, just that mutants are starting to manifest and, you know, here they are.
Okay, I think I've got a better one than you. Because it's not a million miles away, but I'll give mine at the end. I'll give Seb's pitch now, which is fairly brief, but he says, mid-credit scene for Avengers 4, a cemetery in Brooklyn, two gravestones side by side, gradually the names revealed, Steve Rogers and Peggy Carter Rogers, which I guess is a nice, sweet little way of hinting towards what we've said the whole time. or your theory, James,
yeah,
that we've been banging on about every time. I was talking to Reese, he was like, as soon as I heard that, I was like, yes, that is amazing. That needs to happen. You've hit on absolute gold there, and Seb has acknowledged that and stolen it from you.
Yeah.
And I'm also going to incorporate that into my pitch. So my pitch is that mid-credits, you cut to a world that, like, so after the Avengers will win in Avengers 4. But then...
What?
Well, no, they will win in terms of they will defeat Thanos or whatever, you know, like, whatever sacrifice needs to be made.
They're going to defeat my boy Thanos.
They're going to defeat your boy Thanos and bring back Peter and T'Challa.
Bring back all those guys you don't care about. Okay, fair enough.
Exactly. And post-credits, you're going to cut, and it's going to be... there is going to be something that hints towards, hang on, this isn't what we've just seen. This is one of the worlds where the Avengers lost. And not only did those half of the heroes, they've not reappeared. The original ones have died as well. And we are completely without them. And that's when we see the first manifestation of mutant powers. And so you kind of have like a... You're introducing the idea of a multiverse. You're introducing the idea of the X-Men. There'd be a Fantastic Four hint in there as well. And maybe some hint as to how those universes could...
Joe, can I ask you a serious question?
Yeah.
Why do you care so much about multiverses?
Because I just think that's the natural progression for Marvel. And I think it's a clean way of introducing these characters that haven't been around.
Sorry, what's cleaner than the way I suggested, which is that you see the mutants manifesting?
I was going to say that the Fantastic Four had already been around, but if it's just a world where that doesn't make... So there's another multiverse where the Fantastic Four have been around. I don't know. I don't care. And my post-credit scene is literally... Steve walks into the Swan Club and him and Peggy finally have that dance.
Yeah.
I want to see the dance, and that's my post-credit.
Oh, definitely, scene. Definitely.
I don't just want to know that they got married. I want to see that dance.
Like, the only reason I can see of doing a multiverse film or introducing a multiverse is if you want to do Secret Wars, which I'm not opposed to.
Yeah, no, yeah, that I think you open up the multiverse in Phase 4. I'm not saying you just do it to do some hand-waving. I imagine some kind of story like that is the kind of thing that you build towards longer term. And it's what it's going to take Marvel 11 years to get from Iron Man to Avengers 4. I think you set a similar kind of long game play into your post-Infinity War stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a big multiverse level event would be a way to do that, I think. And also it's a way that you can broaden out the Marvel Universe where there are different Iron Men and different Captain Americas, because I don't think they have suitably introduced alternatives to those characters that can take over it, you know, that mantle.
Yeah, I kind of think if you introduce like alternate Captain America, he's always going to be alternate Captain America. Whereas if you recast, people will eventually accept it.
Or unless there's something so demonstrably different that, you know, here is a parallel universe and here is your Captain America, and she's awesome, you know?
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
American Dream, you're saying, instead of Captain America.
Yeah. And you know, you could do stuff like yeah, you can do stuff where, like, as we talked about before, like the Fantastic Four have been around since the 1950s because they're the only superheroes that manifested in their world. Or you can have had mutants having that backstory, but it making sense that they've not been around in the MCU because you've got multiverse stuff going on.
Yeah, I think
you can have crossovers where you don't compromise the MCU by having mutants around all the time, but you allow them to have their own stories elsewhere. But if you need to do a big universe-spanning crossover, they can meet.
Yeah, I mean, I just think the way to do mutants is to keep them very on a very tight rein and only introduce a very small number of them.
Fair.
Yeah. You know, if I had to put money on the post-credit scene for Avengers 4... this isn't what I want to see. I would not be entirely surprised if it's, like, panning out into space, then being like, oh, we've defeated Thanos. Like, what else is out there? And then Galactus showing up.
A villain tease would make sense.
Yeah. Because, like, obviously, you've defeated Thanos. What's the next arc for the MCU? Like, that's the question we're looking at being answered here, right? Like,
yeah.
You beat Thanos. What could top that? And I can't imagine anything more than Galactus topping it. Because those two are the guys. Like, they're the big cosmic threats.
What about Kang?
Kang, true. Kang could also do it.
With all that time messing around, is probably going to get his interest, right?
True, very true. And they do still have the rights. Do they have the rights for Kang? Good question. I think Kang was also introduced in Fantastic Four.
Yeah, that was. They'll have them this time next year.
So if they, yeah, well, that's the thing though. If they've got the Kang rights, they've got the Galactus rights, and I know which I'd use first.
Right. Let's draw a line there. Because this podcast has gone on forever. Of course you won. Seb's not here.
Yes.
And mine don't count. So yes.
The people's champion.
James, you've won by default again.
Yes, the two greatest words in the English language.
So that's it for this week's show. Don't forget that our next episode is on Deadpool 2. Now, Deadpool 2 is released kind of... we would normally have this episode released, I think, so it would be next Monday-ish when we would release the episode. I think Deadpool 2 is released on, like, the Wednesday. So it will be an episode that is slightly late. We might slide in another mini to fill the gap if there is...
if there's sufficient news.
Yes, if there's sufficient news to talk about, or maybe a bonus episode or something like that. But then, yeah, we'll kind of get the Deadpool 2 episode out to you as soon as possible. And then it'll just be the case that there's probably quite a short gap between that and the next minisode. And we'll be back on schedule again. And
we'll have a replacement for Seb.
Yeah. Oh. Who should we bring? Or do we just bring Nomin in? I don't know.
Brie Larson, I was thinking.
Yeah, or we could open up the multiverse.
We can have alternate Seb. Okay, let's try and rescue an alternate Seb.
Yeah. Okay.
Bring him over.
I'm keen on that. Earth 2 Seb?
Yep.
Brilliant. Okay, so hopefully we'll have Earth 2 Seb back with us for our Deadpool 2 podcast.
Penultimate Seb.
If you're enjoying the show, then please do subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. And you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. You can find more episodes of the show at cinematicuniverse.com. Get in touch via Facebook, on Twitter, at @cine_verse, or send us an email to editorial@cinematicuniverse.com. As you found out on this episode, in the last couple of episodes, we pay a lot of attention to the tweets and emails that come in. So please do get in contact and, you know, they'll more than likely end up on the show. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week-ish.
Goodbye.